This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. We need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Well, if you'd like to give us a call from out across America, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We're here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us Dr. Garth Nicholson, and he was formerly professor at the MD Anderson Clinic. He holds a number of positions in academic circles. He is the editor of the co-editor of a number of magazines, and he certainly is the editor of, I think, three at the present time. He has over 530 peer-reviewed articles in the medical literature, and I checked him out some years ago, and after we'd gone through about 250 of them at the medical library, and the librarian said, "Do you really want any more of them?" I said, "No, I'm sure Dr. Nicholson is just who he says he is." And so, of course, we've had the opportunity of talking to him many, many times, because he's very interested in the Gulf War illness, in mycoplasma infection, in the chronic illnesses that affect so many people now in the way of chronic fatigue syndrome, but of course carried over then into many of the progressive neurological changes. Dr. Nicholson, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon.
Well, it's a pleasure to be on your program again.
Well, now, of course, you continue working at this and on the Gulf War illness. In fact, you'd send me a couple of articles, one of them on this infections in fibromyalgia syndrome and chronic fatigue syndrome and other chronic illnesses. And we have so many people that are plagued with this. I remember when I was practicing, you know, where you have these people that have a rear-end collision, and they'd come down with fibromyalgia, and it didn't make any sense. Nothing made any sense. Why, if you had a rear-end collision, would you have just ache all over pain? And only, you know, after I've left medicine have I begun to understand that this is not an uncommon occurrence.
No, it's not. In fact, it's surprising how many people are afflicted with the chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia syndrome, sometimes both.
And they really sort of overlap one another. And but now, of course, you're getting in and working with all of these chronic infections. Why don't you just sort of tell our listeners what your work is, how mycoplasma fits into this, and that all these other chronic infectious organisms that so many of these people carry?
Well, we got involved in this, actually, as you mentioned first, through the Gulf War, because many of the participants in the Gulf War came down with an unusual chronic illness, which was very similar, as we documented, to chronic fatigue syndrome. In fact, we were the first to publish on this in a environmental medicine journal, that the signs and symptoms of Gulf War illness were essentially the same as chronic fatigue syndrome. At the time, there were people, of course, civilians that had chronic fatigue syndrome, but nobody knew what caused it. Nobody knew what it was attributable to, what affects the syndrome, and so on. So when we found that about 40% of the Gulf War veterans with illness had a transmittable infection that we could identify, a chronic mycoplasmal infection, that sort of opened the door to look at some of these other diseases that had very similar signs and symptoms. And sure enough, we found in these other chronic conditions that, similar to what we found in the Gulf War veterans, there was a very high percentage of infection, of chronic bacterial infection and also viral infection. And different from what we found in the Gulf War veterans, we found a variety of different infections. And I actually sent you a kind of a newsletter article from the National Fibromyalgia Organization, because I presented at their last national meeting in Orlando, Florida, on the multiple infections in fibromyalgia syndrome. Now, fibromyalgia syndrome, very similar to chronic fatigue syndrome, but is characterized by severe muscle aches and pains. And a lot of these people will have what are known as multiple trigger points all over their muscular parts of their body. That is, if you press down hard on their muscles, they would be in severe pain, and that shouldn't happen. That's just not normal. And they would have these at many different points on their body. But In some cases, widespread pain and tenderness. In other cases, these specific trigger points where severe pain would result if you pressed on it or even touched it in some cases. And nobody knew what this was due to at all. And we were finding some of these same signs and symptoms in the Gulf War veterans. And so we started looking at these civilians and found lots of these chronic infections in these cases. In fact, in fibromyalgia syndrome, we found that about 70% of these patients had mycoplasmal infections. We found another 30 to 40% had herpes virus infections. We found about another 7 to 10% had chlamydia infections and other bacteria. So they had multiple infections, essentially, and we think that these multiple infections played a very important role in their syndrome. Why? Because many of these infections, such as the mycoplasma and particularly the human herpes 6 virus, or HHV6, tend to target the nerve cells. And when they target the nerve cells, that means the nerves can be inflamed, and if they're inflamed, that means they could fire off very easily. So this could create a situation where you have very painful and sensitive muscles, in some cases joints. And in the fibromyalgia patients, actually, they have a number of other problems as well, which are very similar to chronic fatigue syndrome patients. They have often symptoms similar to irritable bowel syndrome. They have gastrointestinal problems. They also have cognitive problems in many cases. That is, they have brain fog. They have short-term memory loss. Sometimes they have visual problems where they have a very high light sensitivity, for example, or they have eye pain, or they have excess tearing and things like this. So they have all these system-wide or systemic signs and symptoms. And again, no one could attribute these to any particular exposure, any particular condition or whatever. But we were able to find out, in fact, that with these multiple infections, if you treat these infections, the signs and symptoms tended to go away. And eventually, a lot of these people have recovered now from these illnesses, which were virtually untreatable 10 years ago.
And, of course, what are you doing? Are you using Cipro, or are you using doxycycline, or how are you treating them?
Well, it depends on what they have in terms of the infections. A lot of them have mycoplasmal infections, so they have to be treated with antibiotics that will suppress those mycoplasmal infections. If they have viruses, then they either have to be treated with antivirals or their immune system boosted, which is what we prefer to do if we can get away with it.
All right, I'm going to have to interrupt.
The viruses.
I'm going to have to interrupt you there. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Garth Nicholson. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, this is the time we want to tell you about some of the items we carry. One of them, of course, is the Miracle 2 soap products. Now, we don't make any claims at all for it, but many of our people who use the products really are very, very happy with them, and I know some people think that it seems to have, the neutralizer seems to have helped their epigastric discomfort, and others think that so the various soaps have helped their rashes, and the lotion and the gel seem to be beneficial. All we can say really is if you try them and see if you like them, we've found that so many of the people who ordered them have ordered them again and again, and of course most of our orders really are repeat orders from people who used the products and been very, very pleased with them. If you'd like more information, we'll be glad to send it to you. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Of course, we hope you'll want to buy the introductory offer where you can get the soap, the moisturizing soap, the lotion, the neutralizer, and the gel, all five of them at a special reduced price. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then we hope that many of you will want to change your long-distance telephone carrier over to Promise Vision, because when you do, why, we get 15% of your telephone calls. It reverts to Radio Liberty. But what, of course, we really feel it's good service. It's very competitive prices. And when you call there, you get a real live human being. If you want some fun, call AT&T or MCI or one of these companies and try to get a human being. It's almost laughable. They have a program. They really don't want you to get a human being. You spend a half an hour getting a human being. Call 866-448-5631. That's 866-448-5631. And say you want to change to Promise Vision and mention Radio Liberty. That's 866-448-5631. Our four-tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination. A two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of the American president. And then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out. And if you listen to this four-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Garth Nicholson. We'll tell you how to get in touch with his Institute of Molecular Medicine a little later. But we're talking about the treatment of these people with these multiple chronic infections. And some of them are herpes virus, and some of them are brucella, and some of them are mycoplasma. But there are multiple types of infections. And Dr. Nicholson was saying that, of course, that you can use a certain antibiotics, and then, of course, that there are viral problems, why there are certain medicines. What sort of medicines do you use for the viruses?
Well, we first actually suggest that people try boosting their immune system, because often this is enough to suppress the viruses and really alleviates a major problem, which is if you use antivirals, that often these antivirals have undesirable side effects. So as a class, there are many of them that are safe, but some of them have much higher side effects than you get with the types of antibiotics that we recommend, where there are very few side effects, very safe, been used for decades with virtually no problems. So it's just something you have to consider. And a lot of patients seem to do very well with immune boosting. And this can be done by a variety of different ways. There are a number of products that we suggest on our website that people try. It's kind of an individual thing, so people kind of have to try a few different things. But these products are for the most part, food supplements, natural products that people can buy over the counter and take at will, according to the manufacturer's recommendations. And they do help you. In fact, I take some of these things every day. Things like bioactive whey protein, which is a product from milk, but it's the products, the non-casein products from milk to stimulate your immune system. This is a very natural way to stimulate your immune system, and there are a number of other products. Some of these are made from different extracts of plants, everything from mushrooms and so on. And a lot of them are really quite effective.
Well, now, Chris, why do these people have so many infections? What's wrong with their immune system? Because ordinarily the immune system will tend to fight off a disease. You know, this is how we're able to live, surrounded by all sorts of bacteria and diseases and tuberculosis, and, you know, and we just don't come down with it because we're healthy. So what happens to this group of people? Why are their immune systems really non-functional?
Well, you mentioned it actually at the beginning of the program. You mentioned people, for example, that suffer from severe trauma. They're in an automobile accident, or they have a loved one that dies and they get in a severe state of depression or whatever. This is known to depress our immune system, particularly trauma. And when this happens, then you can leave yourself wide open or susceptible to opportunistic infections. And these are all opportunistic infections. These are, for the most part, all airborne infections. And so they're hanging around, and you can pick these up from other people and very easily. And you may even carry these things in your oral cavity. They just simply hang around. But if your immune system is working, they shouldn't really gain entry into your body. They should be suppressed if they do. But if your immune system is on the whack, this can happen, for example, if you have a severe viral episode, for example. It often happens after that. For example, patients that have had polio, a severe polio infection, they often get a post-polio syndrome, and this is a part of that syndrome. Often these patients have additional infections after the polio. This is also true of people that have severe other types of severe viral infections. It could be even influenza, severe influenza infection. They could get other types of secondary infections afterwards. So a severe infection is one thing. Trauma is another thing. Chemical exposure is another thing that happens quite often. People these days are exposed to so many different chemicals in the environment. We found, for example, there was a group of children up in Central California. Very high percentage of autism in this area. This happened to be in San Luis Obispo County. A lot of these children were living near agricultural areas where there was a lot of spraying, and so they had exposure to chemicals and so on. And it turned out it wasn't just the chemicals that caused this problem. They were also, because their suppressed immune systems, very susceptible to these types of chronic infections. So we found very high rates of mycoplasmal infections and other bacterial infections in these children. And if they were adequately treated by changing their diets so that their diets got away from the high sugar diets that children normally have, which is very immune suppressing, to more natural foods and take away some of the allergen causing problems of some of the foods, they started coming around right away. So that's one thing. That another thing we're working on recently, autism. In fact, I was a speaker at the last International Autism Conference in Sydney, Australia, where I talked about the role of chronic infections in autism. So these types of things are cropping up all over the place, particularly in diseases that are virtually emerging or they're seem to be out of control in our population. I think most of these diseases will be traced back to opportunistic infections.
Well, now, what about multiple immunizations? Does that play a part? Because so often we hear the story that, you know, a child was perfectly all right, and then they had a 6 vaccines given in one day, and then the next few days later, everything begins to change.
Well, for the very same reason. This is a very immune-suppressing event. And I'm actually against giving all these vaccines at once. So this is what happened during the Gulf War, where soldiers who were deployed to the Middle East received as many as 20, 25 vaccines within a 3-4-day period. Well, this is very immune-suppressing. It leaves you wide open to not only opportunistic infections, but minor contaminants in the vaccines themselves. And we know, for example, in just random testing of commercial vaccines, that 6% of the vaccines are contaminated with mycoplasma. And ordinarily, if you were to get one vaccine that had a minor contaminant, your body would simply take care of that. It would suppress that. But if you're given 6, 10, whatever, vaccines all at once, your immune system is suppressed. Now even minor contaminants in a vaccine or minor infections become major infections with time. And I think that's how these chronic infections get going. We've seen a tremendous increase in autism, for example, here in California, but also across the United States, corresponding to the addition of these multiple vaccine regimens to children. And we're recommending them at earlier and earlier ages. Now, it's not that I'm against vaccines per se, because I think they do have a role, but what I'm against is trying to put all these vaccines together in one package and try to give them all at once. And there's kind of an emphasis on doing that to make it more convenient for pediatricians to give all these vaccines when you bring your child in at a very early age. And there's also pressure to immunize at an earlier and earlier age. And I think it's dangerous.
I agree with you totally. And now, what part does Lyme disease? We hear, so when I was going to the medical school, and I don't think I ever heard of Lyme disease before in the 1980s, where does Lyme disease fit into this whole thing? And some people are just totally incapacitated with that.
Well, Lyme disease, again, is one of these multiple constellation of infectious agents. And, of course, the most prominent agent in Lyme disease is the Borrelia, the spirochete, the bacteria carried by the tick, but that's not all the tick carries. The tick carries at least another half a dozen other infections at the same time, and you get it all at once. So you get not only the Borrelia, spirochete, but you get other types of bacteria. There's a type of bacteria called Ehrlichia, for example. We know from our own studies and also studies from a laboratory back in New Jersey that 65% of these people also have mycoplasmal infections. And the interesting thing is when you look at these ticks separate from the patient, the ticks are just little bags of infectious agents. They're full of all kinds of infections. And so we think that people that are bitten by these ticks, they get all these infections at the same time. And they're the type of infection that will cause a smoldering chronic illness, which could progress to a more rheumatoid arthritis type of condition or chronic fatigue syndrome and so on. I was just looking before you called at, there's an article out in the CFS Research Review, which is put out by one of the national chronic fatigue syndrome organizations, and the lead article is Lyme disease is a model of chronic fatigue syndrome, and it discusses not only the Lyme spirochete, but also does mention, as our work had showed, that a lot of these patients also have mycoplasma as well. So, again, multiple infectious, chronic infectious agents seem to be very characteristic in these chronic illnesses.
Well, of course, one of the things that we're seeing is an increase in the incidence of many of the progressive degenerative neurological diseases, multiple sclerosis, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. What part do these infections play in these progressive neurological diseases which are destroying the lives of so many people?
I think a very important part. In fact, again, we started with Gulf War veterans because there's a very high incidence of ALS, for example, in Gulf War veterans, and we started there. We found that we found 100% of the Gulf War veterans with ALS. These are not only American veterans, but also British and some Australian veterans had number one, a mycoplasmal infection, number two, a specific virus infection, and these infections, this dual infection, both of these are neurologic type infections, plus the genetic background of the individual, we feel may explain ALS. Now, also in multiple sclerosis, a slightly different type of neurological disease from ALS, that's a situation also that's characterized by chronic infections.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back in just a few minutes here after our break with Dr. Garth Nicholson, who will tell you how to get in touch with his Institute of Molecular Medicine. And, of course, we'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY and here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. Well, this is the Dr. Stan, and of course we want to mention that we carry something called Phenopoly. Phenopoly is a program that will teach children who've been to government schools how to read phonetically, how to spell phonetically, how to pronounce words phonetically. And of course, it's not one game, it's five board games that are played like Monopoly, and two additional games, and then of course we throw in a couple of books, and your whole idea is to teach the child the basic sounds of the English language, the basic rules of the English language, and in about 16 to 20 hours you can begin to reprogram their minds so that they will begin to function as they were meant to, rather than as we've been schooling our kids in, a program designed to fail. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And ask for Phenopoly. And then, of course, we also carry the Oregon curriculum. It's a homeschooling program that will take children from first grade up to the graduation. It's put together by Dr. Art Robinson, who's a very well-known scientist. He put this together and raised his six kids with this. And, of course, all the tests are there, the lesson plans, and all the textbooks except for the Saxon math books. And, of course, when you get this program, well, you'll be in touch with the Oregon curriculum of Dr. Robinson's family, and they'll counsel you right on through this. The beauty of this is you don't have to spend a lot of time with this. You simply have a computer. You print out everything for the children. You do not get the children onto the computer or watching television. You get them reading the classics. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the Oregon curriculum. You won't be sorry if you do.
The Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and a few people have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Dr. Garth Nicholson. Dr. Nicholson, how can people get in touch with your Institute of Molecular Medicine?
Well, they can find us on the World Wide Web at www.immed.org. Just think of it as immediate.org. They can call us at 714-903-2900. They can email us. They can get to us by a variety of different ways, and we welcome your calls. We welcome your interaction on the net, because this information, I think, is very important for people with chronic illnesses. Yes. We're seeing such an increase in this. In fact, I was just on the phone before starting this program with a physician back in New Jersey who's wife had ALS, and he didn't know what to do, and so he was looking through the World Wide Web to see what he could find, and came across our website, because he was just dialed up ALS on his search, and he started to look at it, and he called me up and said, you know, this is the first thing I found that makes sense to my wife's condition, because everything else that he's, you know, looked at didn't really make sense to him in terms of the etiology of the process and what she was going through. So we're going to be in the process of testing her and finding out if she's a candidate for the types of anti-infective therapies that I was discussing at the beginning of the program.
Well, how have the ALS patients doing? For the people out there in the listening audience, this is Lou Gehrig's disease, and it usually strikes fairly young people, and it's just a progressive downhill, a loss of function and paralysis until eventually, you know, you just can't even breathe. And, of course, the incidence of this disease is increasing so dramatically today. It's really frightening. It's very, very rare when I went to medical school, and now we seem to see it attacking so many people. But how well do the patients respond, you know, if they do have significant neurological deficits?
Well, in our last trial that we ran, which was an institutional review board-approved trial, which is an IRB board, which looks at patient safety and so on, so it received all the appropriate clinical reviews. We took 28 patients and put them on an 8-week program, and we found on the average that there was a 20-40% increase in muscle strength. And this is an objective thing to measure, so I think it was a good criteria. Some of the people really showed dramatic progress. We had, for example, one or two of the people regained their speech. They couldn't speak before, they couldn't swallow before, and then they regained the ability to do that. We had one or two patients that couldn't walk. They were wheelchair-bound or were able to get up and walk for the first time in 6 months or a year and so on. So we saw in some patients pretty dramatic progress. But I think the most uniform result was that we stopped the progression of the disease. Now, we know that 8 weeks is not enough. That was just simply a pilot program, and we know that more therapy is required, but that really, I think, showed us that this is the right direction to go in, and I think the results were dramatic enough that even neurologists, who tend to be a very conservative lot and really don't do much for these patients, stood up and took notice.
Well, now, what about, would they be then continued on antibiotics after that? I realize that this was only an 8-week program, but what is your hope? What is eventually down the line, I do think we have to offer these people with this chronic neurological disease, which prior to this, there was no, the only release would be when they died.
Well, again, there were no effective treatments, and they're still considered no effective treatments, although I think this will eventually be considered an effective treatment for ALS if we're allowed to develop it to be its most effective and efficient form. And what we did was treat both the viral and the bacterial infections that we find in these patients. And both the types of infections that we found are neurologic infections. They're types of agents like mycoplasma and this Echo 7 enterovirus that we found in ALS patients that other people in Europe have also found. These tend to concentrate in a certain area of the brain and destroy the cells in that area of the brain. And this results in the whole clinical process of ALS, dying of the nerves, and then of course, the inability to control the muscles and so on and so forth. So treating these, we think, is the first step. We have to probably undergo some neural regeneration program, and we're trying to work on proteins called neurotrophins, which are made in the brain. They're used for brain repair, but by and large, when you're an adult, you stop making these things. So we've tried to reintroduce those to see if we could help in the regeneration process for people with the nerve damage. But I think the most important thing is to stop the infectious agents from killing the cells in the brain, because that really sets up the whole process of ALS. That's the most important, and we need to have more effective protocols in doing that, but I think we're off to a good start.
Well, some people talk about, you know, some of these viruses we got from the monkeys, because, of course, most people took polio vaccine that was grown in either the kidney cultures from rhesus monkeys or green monkeys. Is there any concern about these viruses that now infect a lot of people, and it's all new since we took the polio vaccines?
Well, I think there is a concern about all these viruses and stuff, because it's not only the viruses, but we're being exposed to new bacteria, new meaning genetically altered bacteria. Bacteria are being genetically altered all the time because they undergo selection all the time. But, of course, there's some of these bacteria out there now that have very unusual genetic inserts, and this is one of the things that we stumble across from the Gulf War. And, again, these are very, very pathogenic forms that may have existed in less pathogenic forms in previous times, but now with genetic manipulation, they're much more vicious.
Well, now, are these genetically engineered spontaneously, or has some of these perhaps a byproduct of some laboratory work that went awry?
Oh, I think both. But, of course, it's very hard to prove the laboratory origin of some of these, but I think there's some very strong suspicions about certain diseases like Lyme disease, that in fact these may have arisen from laboratories where they were undergoing development of biological warfare agents and so on. And, you know, we can't really prove that definitively. It's right now, it's just a very strong suspicion. But a lot of these things arose at a time when these sorts of experiments were going on.
What about the fact that the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology actually has a patent on this very pathological mycoplasm, which apparently is quite a new organism, this fermentis that you've been working with?
Well, it's not that it's so new. I think the genetic alterations are probably new. We just don't know. I mean, we know that they were working on this before the Gulf War. They were testing it in the prison system. I got into a lot of trouble because we stumbled across this program where they were not using informed consent to test these things in the prison system in Texas, and there were a lot of inmates that were dying, and the guards were getting sick, and they came to us. There were so many cases of ALS in some of these small towns where prisons were located that it was just astounding. In fact, in the Huntsville area, Texas alone, there were four ALS patients on the same block. I mean, you just would never see this with the normal incidence. It's supposed to be like 1 in 200,000. And all of a sudden, in a little town of 30,000, there are 35, 40 cases of this. You know, it's astounding what was going on in the prisons. And, of course, all these people were linked to the prisons. They were either guards or administrators or worked in the infirmary, or they had some contact with the prison. And these were the people that were getting sick. And, of course, the inmates were getting sick and dying at an alarming rate.
And, of course, basically this was some sort of a macabre experiment carried out to, were they testing a mycoplasm vaccine, or were they testing mycoplasm itself, or do we have any way of knowing?
Well, we really don't have a way of precisely knowing, although some of the people down there who were victims of some of these experiments actually dug out the records from the prison board and proved that they had actually approved these mycoplasma vaccine experiments, and they were being conducted in the prison system, And we think that's how a lot of this got out of control.
Well, isn't doing this without informed consent a violation of the Nuremberg concepts and certainly a violation of the law? One thing to do experiments, but to do them without the people's consent, even if you're a prisoner, isn't that an immoral thing to do?
Oh, yes. It's a complete violation of the law, both the national and international. And you're just not supposed to use prisoners as guinea pigs for these sorts of things. And of course, I think those programs have been shut down now because they've been under scrutiny, partly because of the issues that we raised. But again, we paid a very heavy toll for that.
You mean pressure was put on you, your academic position there at MD Anderson Clinic?
Oh yeah, they were trying to actually. When I stumbled across that, they gave me an ultimatum that I either shut up and stop this work or I was going to be fired. And I was an endowed full professor, department chairman. I held an endowed chair. It was a little bit difficult to trump something up to try and get rid of me, but they did. They tried to trump things up to try and eliminate me, and I refused to shut up. It was easier just to leave the institution than it was to keep quiet about some of the things that were happening. You just couldn't keep quiet about these kinds of things. They were so unethical. It was just you couldn't.
Well, I'm glad you couldn't be quiet, because I fear that an awful lot of people would have done the expedient thing rather than the righteous thing. But God bless you for taking a stand on this.
And well, it took quite a toll. I mean, there are three of my students that were now dead who are, again, along with me in raising the issue. We went through several attempts on our lives and so on. And so there was quite a toll from all this. It wasn't an easy thing to do.
Well, at least, we're getting the information now, which is why I appreciate your coming onto this program. And ladies and gentlemen, you must understand that this sort of thing really happens in America. And Dr. Nicholson, I've talked to some of his students, and, he was certainly sort of their idol. They idolized him when he was there at the university. He did a wonderful, wonderful job, and certainly he's internationally known and internationally recognized. But when they target you for actually uncovering some of the things that are going on in the world, they can certainly make your life very, very miserable. Well, anyway, of course, you continue working on this, and we see this explosion in the incidence of ALS, and how about multiple sclerosis? Is that increasing at an alarming rate as well?
Yes, it is. And although it has different types of manifestations in ALS, it's a little more nonspecific a process, demyelinating process than ALS. But the incidence is going out of control with MS as well, and the other neurologic diseases, which were rarely seen and are now seen. And so that I've had people contact me, for example, with peripheral neuropathies and things like this that you rarely saw before, and now all of a sudden they're becoming more and more common. And it's also a side effect of some of the other illnesses as well. These infections that target nerves can virtually attack any nerves in your body. And so I think this is something in the future that we're going to have to pay a lot more attention to.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to have to take another break, and then when we get back, we'll invite your calls at 464-8295 or at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Our guest, Dr. Garth Nicholson of the Institute of Molecular Medicine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and you're going to hear things here that you're never going to hear from Barbara Walters, Dan Rather, or Tom Brokaw, because they're paid very large sums of money not to reveal the truth, but to conceal the truth from the American people. We're in real trouble. We've got, we're involved in a spiritual battle that's being fought on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield. But, I mean, why would anybody be doing things like this? Why would anybody be threatening people who are trying to bring out the truth and save human lives? And you have to understand that the same spirit which existed in Hitler's Germany exists here in America today. And it's happening because the good people aren't involved and because the church is silent and the ministers won't speak out because, in many instances, quite frankly, they're afraid to speak out. And so we simply ask you, if you want to be part of our team, if you care about what's happening, you care about the people who are out there suffering and, of course, contracting diseases unnecessarily and new diseases, Are you going to wait until perhaps it affects somebody in your family, and then it's too late? Commit yourself at this time. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Join the Radio Liberty family. Tell others about our programs. Of course, go to our website at radioliberty.com and tell others about the website. Help us to get the truth out that you're not going to get from other sources. That's 5 hours a day we speak out on what's really going on radio, on satellite, on internet, certainly on shortwave. We have a voice, but we need your help to not only to maintain but to expand that voice. Our number 1-800-5-HIV. WARP.
Another of our fascinating four tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps, and it's four interviews with people talking about the move to establish concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And, of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders, which were actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen or what they may be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for America, our values, our future are under attack today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and as many of you know, I was a physician for many years, and when I went to medical school, we never heard of Lyme disease. We never heard of Ebola. In fact, the cases of Ebola, the two major, most shocking ones, the first one occurred in a place called Marburg, Germany, with a disease in that same category. It occurred in laboratory monkeys that were going to be used to produce polio vaccine. Fortunately, the monkeys began dying before they were used for the kidneys to grow the polio vaccine, or they would have killed off most of Africa. And then, of course, the only outbreak of Ebola we had here in the United States was in laboratory monkeys. There's all sorts of new diseases, the mycoplasm, especially the pathological mycoplasm, the Lyme disease that we didn't see before. Are these things happening by accident? Well, I think that Dr. Garth Nicholson's on the front lines trying to get to the bottom of this, and of course trying to help the tragic victims of these new diseases, the chronic fibromyalgia, the chronic fatigue syndrome, the Gulf War illness, and now of course we have so many of our servicemen having problems from the anthrax vaccine. You've actually written about the anthrax vaccine, several articles, haven't you?
Oh yes, I have. In fact, I have a new one coming out with Dr. Merrill Nass, which really contradicts a lot of the Defense Department claims about the anthrax vaccine, that it's safe and it's effective. We counter those claims with the actual data.
Well, what are the actual data? Could you get into that?
Some of the actual data that are now available from some of the military bases where the anthrax has been used indicate that it's not so safe, and it's not as safe certainly as they're saying it is. And it contradicts what the Department of Defense spokespersons are saying about the anthrax vaccine. And so we don't consider it safe. We consider it a very risky vaccine. There's a very high rate of adverse reactions. Many of the people that took the anthrax vaccines later came down with an illness that's identical with Gulf War illness. And, of course, during the Gulf War, if you were deployed to the Persian Gulf and received the multiple vaccinations, you're at a very high risk to get Gulf War illness compared to those people that somehow avoided the vaccines. And so in that case, Gulf War illness was really highly associated with these multiple vaccines. And the anthrax vaccine was one of those vaccines. And we think that's a particularly dangerous vaccine that's never been appropriately approved by the FDA. It's never received the same scrutiny that other vaccines have received, and it's a very problematic vaccine.
No, of course, we sent about 700,000 men and women to the Gulf. Do we have any idea how many cases of Gulf War illness there are today?
Now, they're documented, 150,000 of those service personnel that have illnesses and directly related to the Gulf War. We know from our contacts in the Pentagon that there's at least 28,000 that have died. Now, that's a classified number. You won't hear that anywhere except on your radio program, because that number is a very secretly held number. In fact, the last numbers that we had available were really in about 1995, and at that time it was more like 9,000-something. But the numbers have grown over the years, and people have gotten these chronic illnesses that have progressed into either autoimmune illnesses or other problems, and eventually they've died. So we have a terrible problem here that's being covered up, and now we're talking about using the same vaccines that were used then, same types of exposures, sending people overseas in the same way, virtually unprotected, for these types of opportunistic infections that are not only there. Some of them are variants that have been used as war agents, that is, biological warfare agents. Some of them are lethal agents. Some of them are incapacitating agents. But the ones that cause the chronic illnesses are basically what's known as incapacitating agents. These are agents designed to incapacitate an enemy and force you to take two or three people to help solve the problem of one person becoming sick, rather than just killing them, and then you bury them in the ground and go on. So it's really a method of warfare that we saw during the Middle Ages, where during storming of cities and sieges of cities, they resulted to, for example, taking contaminated water, contaminated animals, allowing the water to trickle in, or throwing the animals over the walls to hopefully contaminate the population. And in fact, in some areas, it was quite effective as an approach to a long-term siege.
But it would appear that it's our men that are under attack. This is a disastrous figure. These are young people. They shouldn't be dying at all. 28,000 of the 700,000 boys we sent over are dead. That's a frightening figure.
It is frightening, and in fact, it's frightening to even when you talk to people about this information, that just a cloud comes down because they just don't want to even acknowledge it. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to recognize it. These were mistakes that we made, and we have to correct these mistakes because we're making the same mistakes all over again. And our anthrax immunization program, we think, is a terrible mistake. This shouldn't happen.
Well, I've read recently that the government has backed away from giving this to the servicemen. They're only going to give it to the people going overseas for more than 2 weeks. And they're going to take the rest of it and put it in depots across America to give to the American people. Of course, now we're passing laws that will force the American people to be vaccinated, of course, in a public health emergency. And if you refuse, you become a criminal. And you can be isolated, and you can be put into a detention camp because they refuse to be immunized. And they've got these vaccines with no track record. They're talking about forcibly giving the American people. I think this model emergency model state emergency health powers act is one of the most frightening things I've ever seen. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it could be a complete disaster. It's one thing to face an emergency like this. It's another thing to use unproven and totally untested methods to try and solve the problem. It could make the problem entirely worse. So these are things that we have to be very careful about. We've been advising the FBI and the Secret Service on counter-bioterrorism, and one of the things that we've warned them about are the fact that if they think they're going to use these wholesale vaccination programs to get around the problem, they're dead wrong. So we've, tried to consult with them and give them some other ideas on how to handle these problems.
Well, I certainly think the thought of everybody, having things on hand to increase their own immunity. How do you think about things like the products in garlic and oil of oregano and echinacea and things of that sort? Are they effective?
Well, to various degrees they are, and I think these are things that we need to explore more effectively, and unfortunately there really isn't the federal funding to do this, but we've recommended that people keep their immune systems on alert because of all these infectious agents that are out there, and of course these are some of the things that you've mentioned that I actually recommend, and if you go on my website you'll see these sorts of things mentioned and some possible sources on where to get them, and I know some of the sponsors of the radio programs that you offer are also the same people that make some of these products. So I think some of these are useful, not all of them, but I think many of them are useful, and particularly if they're used in the right combinations.
All right, fine. And let's get that website out just once more and the telephone number.
It's www.immed.org. Just think of immediate.org.
Right.
And then the telephone number is 714-903-2900.
And, of course, the reason that you would want to know this is because if you have one of these chronic fatigue syndromes or a chronic fibromyalgia or even some of the neurological problems, well, you need to know whether or not you have a mycoplasma infection. And the only way this can be done is with PCR, very, very sensitive PCR and testing. And not you not only test for the mycoplasma, don't you test for some of these other things like the chlamydia and others?
We test for a lot of the infectious agents that are causing the chronic problems of both viruses and bacteria. And yes, we also test for chlamydia. Chlamydia pneumoniae is a very important infection. A lot of heart patients have this, as well as mycoplasmal infections. A lot of the chronic patients, we find that 10% of the chronic fatigue syndrome patients have chlamydia infections. That's another very important one. And some of the viruses that I mentioned before, like HHV6, are very prominent and important in these conditions. So in general, you need to know this information. So if you have one of these illnesses, you need to be tested. And I think at a very minimum, to convince your primary physician, your primary care doctor, that there's a problem here that needs to be attended to, that you have infections and they can't ignore it any longer.
Well, I think one of the things is that, you know, as a physician, I know they would bring people to our medical meetings to convince the doctors that there is no chronic fatigue syndrome, there is no fibromyalgia. It's all in the patient's head. And I think that is one of the greatest bits of misinformation that has ever been put out. Well, thank you so very much for being with us here on our program. Do you have any parting thoughts for our listeners?
Well, I think that, you know, there is hope. A lot of these chronic illnesses that are increasing in incidence in our country and worldwide, there are some new approaches to solve these problems. There's some new treatments that are proven to be very effective. You just have to know about these. You have to be informed. And unfortunately, you can't just take the knowledge of your mainstream physician and follow their advice, because often they don't have this advice because they've not kept up. And again, in some cases, in some corners, it's considered politically incorrect, but it is gaining, I think it's gaining in its popularity, as I know I'm being invited to more national and international meetings to talk about it to physician groups.
Well, I'm so glad you are, and I appreciate your willingness to take a stand in this. God bless you for everything you do, and we'll be talking to you again on Friday evening, I think, when we have you on. Thank you so very much, guest. It's been Dr. Garth Nicholson. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, that was Dr. Nicholson. I hope you enjoyed the story. It's really an incredible story, but let me tell you that I checked this gentleman out very, very thoroughly before we put him onto our programs, and his students just loved him. He was forced out of his position. Why? Because he knew that they were experimenting, and the prisoners and the diseases were getting, of course, into the general population of these communities. And how could you, of course, allow the American people to know that? Why, this is the sort of thing they did in Hitler's Germany. Well, what most people don't know is that we brought many of the Nazi scientists back to America. In fact, we carry a book all about the head of the Gestapo, who lived in Piedmont here in California, and is buried in St. Mary's Hospital in Piedmont, the head of the German Gestapo. And you see, the same spirit that was there then in Hitler's Germany is here now. And if you need more information, of course, well, you can get it from Radio Liberty. Pray for America. Pray for our leaders. Pray for our ministers. But please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, may the Lord be with you.